You're listening to Health First, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, it's our lucky day. We haven't had a call in from... Oh, we have a call here from Karen Jensen, and she's going to be with us very shortly. We're going to be talking about the book, Women's Health Matters. And she's done a lot of research, finding that all the old research was done on men for all diseases. And now we know that women and men are very, very different in how we... are influenced by disease and how we treat disease. So welcome, Dr. Karen Jensen.
Thank you very much.
It's so good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So,
are you guys freezing up there?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's we're winning. We got daylight and spring coming.
Well, that's great. Same here.
Yeah. So the book you wrote, Women's Health Matters, this is, how many books have you written?
This is number 7.
Number 7. What a lot of research.
It has been, yeah. But I'm passionate about it. You know, I'm supposed to be retired, but, you know, it's just a gift to be able to keep paying it forward with the information that you glean over 30 years in the field.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the most important things you found out about women?
Oh, that's a pretty broad question. I think we need to kind of look at it and say, well, a lot of people aren't familiar with the gender or sex. You know, they're used interchangeably, the two terms in clinical studies primarily, are the differences in men and women and how they metabolize medications, why they react to medications differently, and why some diseases are more prevalent. One of the quotes I have in my book, which I found very interesting that I was unaware of, was every cell in the body has a sex.
I just read that. Yeah. That's fascinating.
It means that men and women are different even down to a cellular level. And, of course, this also means that treatments and chemicals will affect men and women differently. And some of these reasons are the differences in brain structure and, of course, are, you know, the gene expression, the X and Y chromosomes. Women generally have a higher body fat composition, and the gut physiology and transit time is slower in women, so they will react more readily to drugs because they stay in the system longer, and of course, hormones. And in spite of all these differences, most of the trials today are still done on men, and this is having a profound and negative effect on how women are treated, particularly when it comes to certain diseases.
So after all your research, are they not starting to do more research on women?
Well, historically, if we go way back, all the research primarily was done on men, and a lot of that came from, you know, back when thalidomide, you know, and diethylstilbestrol caused birth defects in women. So the initial focus was to eliminate women of childbearing ages from the clinical trials. But what happened is that sort of crossed all areas. And even today, only about a third, and that's pushing it, I would say anywhere between 25% and 33% of the trials are done on women. And even then, the results are not analyzed by sex and gender. So we're none the wiser, really, on how these, whether it's treatment studies or drug studies, how they affect men and women differently. And this really needs to change. What I am seeing in the media the last, I would say only the last few months, really, is more information about that, on how we need to stop with the disparity in the clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. So if we're just dealing with thyroid or adrenals, or pancreas, and they create hormones too, are those hormones the same in men and women, not just the sex hormones?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, if you're just dealing with adrenal fatigue or hypothyroid or maybe diabetes, is treated the same or different in men and women now?
Well, hypothyroidism would be treated the same, and that's, you know, that's correct. You know, the thyroid produces hormones in men the same as it does in women. The adrenals produce hormones, but the precursor hormones, which are then further broken down, and the men, those precursor hormones go on to become either androgens or break down into various estrogens in women. So the adrenal function is primarily the same in women. The thyroid function is primarily the same, but of course the ovary and the testes function is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when we jump into the gut, like you were saying, and the microbiome, so men can have faster transit times. Things are working differently even through the digestion.
Exactly. Like a really good example of that would be, say, your common acetaminophen, over-the-counter, you know, Tylenol. It's flushed from the woman's body 60% slower than men. And because women metabolize drugs differently, there's a common sleeping drug out in the States called Ambien. Most people have heard of it. And what they found is 15% of women versus 3% of men were groggy and had side effects the next morning. And as a result, there was more impairment, more accidents. And it wasn't until after being on the market for over 20 years that the dosages were changed, even though they knew these differences prior to the drug coming onto the market. So I think we need to sort of say, well, if we're primarily studying men, how do you know that these drugs or treatments will have the same effects or risks in women? And bottom line is you just don't. And so what does that mean, I guess, you know, in our field and in what women can do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, it's when people have a greater level of knowledge, it allows for more participation with their healthcare practitioner in order to make safe, informed, and effective treatments that best suit their needs. But overall, I think we need to look at the goal in healthcare, which is the best degree of health with the least degree of harm. And so there, I would really encourage, preventative medicine and looking at what we can do. Say, you brought up the adrenals, to prevent stress in the body, which is one of the main underlying factors for most chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got the adrenal support, and, you know, one of my favorite go-tos over the years, not just because I formulated it, but I've sort of been considered queen of adrenals. That's where a lot of my book focuses have come in, the importance of adrenal health. Adrenosense is a tried-and-true product on the market. There's lots of adrenal support products now, but Adrenosense helps to regulate or balance the adrenals, whether they're in a more hyper state or hypofunctioning. And for all the years in practice, I would talk to my patients about adrenals and stress, but more research is showing that the gut, and you brought up the microbiome as well, exposure to stress actually alters the gut microbiome, which causes inflammation and different gastrointestinal and inflammatory disorders. But the gut microbiome also directly affects the area of the brain, the hypothalamic pituitary area, that affects the adrenals. So by supporting the gut microbiome with probiotics, that also helps prevent an overreaction in the stress hormones in the body. So adrenals and gut both have a profound effect on the way stress hormones are released.
And would women be more likely to have their adrenals worn down just by the nature of their being mothers and taking care of so much? Besides,
physically, I think women have a higher degree of stress. Now, it's just harder to say because men aren't quite as ready to talk about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I would say yes, women are out in the workforce, they're coming home, they're, in most cases, I won't say in all, carrying a big part of the, you know, maybe a more majority of the family workload with kids. So I would say yes, but men equally, I won't say equally, but men also experience stress-related conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say stress-related, I also mean inflammatory, because long-term secretion of cortisol particularly stops the, how can I say, let's back up. Initially, the main stress hormone, cortisol, is a friend with inflammation, but over time, if cortisol is chronically elevated, it's unable to regulate the inflammatory reaction in the body. And so inflammation has been shown to cause, as we now know, it's more common knowledge, neurological conditions, depression, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, arthritis, autoimmune diseases, and even diabetes. So, but then we need to back it up. What causes
the
inflammation, right?
Yeah. So what does cause that cortisol to stay elevated? The adrenals are producing that cortisol. It stays up. You get inflamed. Why?
Well, I just explained that a prolonged stress alters the effectiveness of cortisol, which cortisol would normally regulate the inflammatory response. Mm-hmm. But what happens with prolonged stress, the effectiveness of cortisol is compromised, and then inflammation gets out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens with the gut microbiome that contributes to inflammation is that if the gut microbiome is out of balance, then that would cause inflammation or substances or pathogens to get into systemic circulation, which would then cause both local, so gut inflammation, as well as systemic inflammation. And some of the problems that we're looking at as a result of inflammation is, say, depression.
Mm-hmm.
And anxiety, which are over doubly as common in women as in men. And so what they found in one really interesting study, they found that treatment-resistant patients, so patients that have been given two rounds of antidepressants that didn't work, they're considered treatment-resistant. When they added an anti-inflammatory in the study, in this case it was aspirin, by the end of the study, 80% of the participants had improved.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at sort of, say, some natural anti-inflammatories that are available. Brain Defense, I love that product. It's one of the three brain lines that are carried in the health food stores, and it has anti-inflammatory herbs in it. It also has herbs in it to help with stress. So anyone that's taking an antidepressant could take Brain Defense. It's not contraindicated if the antidepressant isn't quite giving them the results that they would like. Or for people that aren't taking an antidepressant, there's a natural product on the market called Cloud9, which contains saffron. And saffron has been shown to be very effective in mild to moderate depression. It also contains 5-hydroxytryptophan and B6 and inositol. So all of those ingredients have been shown to be effective in the treatment of depression.
That's a beautiful product. It works so well. We've used that in our family. We're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Karen Jensen on Women's Health Matters.